This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us on Resource Center. This is Audrey Raj. It is the first Tuesday of the month, which means organizational psychologist and CEO of OPSYCH, Hetal Doshi, is joining me for another episode of Psychology at Work. Good morning, Hetal. Can you believe it is August already?
Already, Audrey. I cannot believe it. There's just such a difficult way of understanding space and time these days.
Yes, tell me about it. Now, I know that we're going to be doing something different on the show today. We're going to be talking about what Malaysian employers and employees have been experiencing over the last 3 months. And you've collected some data on this, right?
Yep. So we have surveyed 5 different organizations over the past 3 months. And we've collected a sample size of over 200, and it is across different levels within the organization, and all of the industries that we're talking about are also varied. So it's super interesting because it's all about what people have been experiencing in, over the past pandemic.
Yeah, so it's all this data has been compiled as the Malaysian workforce chugs along, you know, not only with the pandemic raging in the background, but also in the thick of an emergency, a full MCO, working from home. Yeah. So where do we start, Hetal? What's the first piece of data you have for us?
Okay, so what was really interesting for me, Audrey, was that, you know, there is this belief that leaders are probably going through the highest levels of stress because of the amount of responsibilities that they have. Mm. However, in our data, it showed that as each layer went down the organization, there was an increase in perceived levels of stress. So every time there's a minus one in the end or in the level, there was almost a 20% increase in levels of stress. And that was a big shocker for me.
Right. So if you can imagine a pyramid with the leaders on the top and, you know, staff through various layers going down below, the highest level of stress would be at the lower rungs.
Yes, absolutely. And the least level of stress would be, in general, in average, right at the top.
But the thing is that, you know, we've heard how leaders are really struggling at the moment, you know, just managing the workforce and also managing their business. It's survivability, right?
Yeah. It's crazy. So there was a study conducted by Sherman et al. In 2012, and it found that despite the fact that leaders face more demands as they experience or put themselves in more powerful positions, they also experience a heightened sense of control. So there is a model called the demand control support model. So even though the demands are very high, their level of control, which is also a psychological factor known to, you know, to have stress buffering effects, exist. So, you know, what it is that it says is that one of the items that we measured was I can get people to listen to what I say. And so having that ability to have more people to be able to listen to what they say and therefore they have more control in what they can do seems to be one of the most powerful buffers that they would be potentially having, apart from many other things like, you know, privilege gives us more resources, potentially help us in the house. Privilege gives us all kinds of other resources such as, I don't know, you know, you've got all these extra allowances that can kind of help you out, and maybe extra money in the bank account. Mm. So it is the case of not only demand, but you got to look at it in terms of control and support as well. Super interesting, isn't it? And so one thing that also came out in a study by this guy called Sapolsky in 2017, it shows that this is also true in the hierarchy of non-human primates, or in this case, baboons. It found that in the study, animals with higher social ranks actually have lower stress levels. Mm. So it brings up the chicken and egg question as well. Does being higher up on the organizational ladder cause bosses to be less stressed? Or is it possible that people with less stress or anxiety are be able to handle more leadership roles, which then helps them get promoted? The truth is really that leadership affords or gives you this privilege of having an enhanced sense of control and information that helps you to buffer against stress.
Okay, so Hetal, I have to ask you about the level of awareness on that leadership rung. about the kind of stress that's being experienced by the lower rungs. What would you say the level of awareness is, and what can leaders do to kind of, well, have their finger on the pulse?
I think, right, this really brings about, because of the power distance, also a cognitive bias of sorts, that leaders may have this perception that I am stressed as well. And so when they hear other people complain, they'll be like, yes, I am stressed as well, but I get on with it and I try to do all kinds of things. However, they may forget that they also have very high levels of control. Whereas at lower levels, you know, their lives are not really in the highest level of control. It is up to their boss's hands. They may not even have enough information. And so therefore, not having information also leaves them in that perplexity of, I don't know, and I don't know what's going to be happening next. So this cognitive bias, I think, prevents people across different layers from actually sitting down and really connecting with each other from a pain perspective, and from that pain, working with possibilities rather than, here's the pain A, I'm solving my problem, you also should solve your problem. So I think it really gives room and space for people to stay in that space of pain rather than going into you know, straight away moving into solutions. And this is what we really see as happening in the organizations. Like, I'm going through pain, you're also going through pain, just get on with it. But actually, we need to take a pause here and just understand that pain requires a bit more space. From that space, without any bias, using that as a point of, okay, all right, everybody's going through this pain. How do we create possibilities going forward? And that's not really happening in the organization.
Right. And just one last one before we move on to that second set of data. Is job security in any way associated with the level of stress experienced by the lower rungs?
Interestingly, job security hasn't popped up as a core issue. However, in our qualitative data, what has come up is this idea of being questioned all the time that really creates high levels of insecurity. So what we have found out is that over 60% have actually said that one of the things that irritates them the most or frustrates them the most is the idea of their position in the workplace, what it is that they're doing is being questioned as whether it really adds value or not. And that may lead to perceptions of job security, but at a manifestation level, what people are saying is that I'm constantly being questioned whether I'm good enough.
Ooh. Okay. All right. Maybe we can move on to our next piece of data.
So the top five issues in the workplace that were recorded, we call this psychosocial risk. And what this means is that as we call physical risks in the workplace, like, you know, maybe not wearing a seatbelt or, you know, sitting in chairs that are not ergonomically designed or hot mugs that are at the edge of a table, all these physical risks, what psychosocial risks are considered would be the emotional risks to a person. Does that make sense, Audrey?
What kind of emotional risk are you talking about?
I love this because people don't understand it, right? Just as how we have physical risk to our body, we have emotional risk to ourselves as well. So say, for example, high workload. Although it is not physically damaging to us, it is emotionally and mentally damaging. So we call it a psychosocial risk. It is emotionally and mentally damaging to us. And because it's damaging to us emotionally and mentally, it affects the relationships and the outcomes in the workplace as well. So we're not looking, organizations have really, really matured. They're not looking at physical risks anymore. When they talk about health and safety, they're also talking about emotional and psychological risks. So in this particular study, the top five things that came up as the biggest risks in an organization based on people's experience is high workload, self-rated health, which is coupled with burnout and stress. So you've got high workload, and then you've got stress and burnout. Then the third thing is work-life conflict. The fourth thing is organizational justice and respect. And the fifth thing is influence and work. So if there's a storyline to it, it could sound like there's a lot of work that is coming in, obviously not well prioritized, and maybe lack of focus, or just basically fear-driven. So we're just so scared that we have to do everything. And this obviously affects my health, emotional health, that turns into obviously physical pains as well. And because of this, all this extra burden, I have work-life conflict, meaning I don't have time for my life.
Yeah. or the boundaries are blurred.
Exactly, exactly. And now, you know, obviously, you know, you're not even in a physical workspace, right?
Yeah.
But this also could be because of this feeling of organizational justice and respect, meaning things are just not fair in the workplace and I'm not respected equally in the workplace. So that's what's coming up. So even if I want to say anything, I just don't feel that things are going to be handled in a fair manner. Mm. And lastly, as I mentioned, influence at work. So people don't feel that they can influence anything.
They don't have a say, they don't have a voice.
Exactly. So that feeling that I may not have a say, I may not have a voice, and even if I do, it may not be taken in a way that is just and fair.
So it does come back down to the level of control that you have as well, right?
Aren't you a psychologist as well now, Audrey?
I'm learning from you, Hetal.
Absolutely. I think it really comes back down to that ability to... So when you look at high workload, right? Although it looks like, okay, it's high workload, but if you double click on high workload, it could be that, number one, the organization just isn't clear about what it is that they're doing. Number two, leaders may have lack of focus and priority. Number three, the teams may not be collaborating well or talking to each other. And number four, it could be that you yourself do not have that level of control or that voice to be able to say, hey guys, there's something really wrong here.
Mm.
But when we actually open it up, Audrey, when we get teams to actually talk about what the root cause of high workload is, they actually then realize that it's a matter of just having a conversation with each other, being able to really influence each other based on everybody's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that perspective saying, hey, I think we're all experiencing the same thing. So why don't we just eliminate some of these unnecessary workload or upskill each other as we learn from each other? And then we'd be able to eliminate this altogether. So it really comes back to the idea of, hey, am I good enough to actually table something? Am I able to create this space where everybody can influence each other? And as an outcome, are we able to grow from it? And that's not really happening. And that really comes back down to self-efficacy, self-confidence, but also a safe space.
Hmm. All right. It is already time for us to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss social well-being, languishing versus flourishing, and so much more. You're listening to Psychology at Work on Resource Center. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and more. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. You're listening to Resource Center. My name is Audrey Raj, organizational psychologist and CEO of OSIC. Hetal Doshi is online with me right now. It's episode 5 of our Psychology at Work series. And on this episode, we're discussing workplace experiences over the course of this pandemic. Now, Hetal, you've been sharing with us data that you've collected over the past 3 months from Malaysian employers and employees. And where did we leave things, Hetal? Where do you want to come back to that second piece of data where we were talking about high workload and stress and burnout? Or do we move on?
I think it is really valuable just considering what we've been seeing on social media, right? There's like so many cases of organizations coming up in the news for experiences that they've had with regards to organizational injustice. For example, an airlines company that has just come up and people felt that it was a very unfair experience.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I know the one you're talking about. Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. And so for me, this comes back down to organizational justice and respect and also influence at work. So the person experiencing it probably felt that they couldn't influence it directly within the workplace and so took it out on social media, right? And we call this the whispers becoming screams. So this may have had, you know, may have been experienced many different times. And so they feel that within the organization itself, maybe if I voice things out, nothing will work. So let me take it out on social media. I think this is a whole big systemic issue that starts by just really not having the respect to listen to each other and actually resolve it in a fair manner. And so I would tell organizations, you know, as a piece of advice, when you're listening, listen deep and listen hard. Also make sure that the solutions that you come up with are primary solutions, meaning they address it head on rather than trying to come up with placated versions of it. So say, for example, if people are not happy, you organize a well-being talk. That doesn't make sense at all. If people are not happy about their experiences in the workplace, make it a collective way of talking about the pain, from that pain, really getting the community to address it from within. And if you don't, I think, you know, one of the things that we've realized with whistleblowing cases are on the rise within organizations. And people putting things up on social media are also on the rise. Do I agree that it should be on social media? Absolutely not. But I think systemic issues that arise to these kind of, more and more of these kind of experiences as well. So please do listen and please do address these pain points, from a primary intervention, not like maybe we should do a wellness talk.
Mm. Is the disconnect due to the fact that we're all, somewhat working remotely, working from home? Is the disconnect growing
because of that?
Yeah. Do you think?
Yeah. Is
that a factor?
I think it's compounding, right? So the whispers are becoming screams because of the compounding effects of stress as well. So it's getting more and more stressful. We feel probably that there's less and less control. And so then we feel a little bit helpless and we just take on whatever is the most convenient pathway to get our voices heard as well. So is it because of the pandemic? I think it's definitely because of compounding experiences of stress that are building up.
All right. So what's the next piece of data that you have for us, Hetal?
Yeah, so this is definitely one of the most interesting things that I've found when it comes to the concept of well-being, or also what people are using as a concept called flourishing. Mm. So in terms of our well-being scores, when we looked at psychological well-being, which is like, how do you use your mind to be able to cope with situations? Emotional well-being would be, how do you choose more positive emotions rather than negative emotions to kind of look into how you can create resolution in experiences. And then you've got social well-being, which is how do you use social resources around you to feel happy and to stay happy or to stay in a good space. Across all of the organizations that we collected data from, the lowest scores were for social well-being.
Hmm.
And I love that you're like,
That's
really interesting. I really wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, because I would think maybe emotional well-being would be the hardest hit,
Absolutely. And because Malaysia is very, high on collectivism as a culture, right? Like we are very we kind of a culture. And people, rely on people as a way, to stay as like this happy community kind of a thing, right? That's a very Malaysian thing to be doing. What this really tells me here is that I think, so this is my hypothesis. During this pandemic, obviously, it could be one of the reasons why social well-being scores are low. My hypothesis is that society is looked at as such a big thing these days, meaning the pandemic is part of the society. Then you've got social media. So everything is really, really huge. Whereas social well-being, I think, should be contained towards your own social circle rather than opening it up to the whole world, opening it up to social media. And the moment you open up your social networks to such a huge space, you then obviously decrease control all over again as well. So what I really mean by this is that, the pandemic is going on. And yes, okay, things on social media are blowing up. They're always going to be blowing up, by the way. And if it's not the pandemic, it'll be something else as well, by the way. I think what this really means for me is that when we had conversations with people about this, one of the best ideas that really came up is to reduce your social circles all the way back down to who it is that you really enjoy being with, and keep it to that and minimize all other, voices from the larger society per se, and begin to add lots of goodness in these small little circles that you have created for yourself. So some of the small little things could be, write a note to people that you love, send food to the people that you love, put a smile on their face. When I tried this out, because my social well-being scores were very low and I was very, very shocked by it because I'm a very social person, I love people. But what I realized was that I didn't realize to tighten up my social circle all over again. I started giving them food. Today, Audrey, I don't have to make lunch at all because of what I've given, I get back as well. And my social well-being scores have shot up. So I would say tighten control all over it and go back down to the top five people that, really inspire you, influence you, give and get back energy from that social circle.
Can you actually
very easily you can go up? Yep. Sorry.
Can you actually do that in a workplace setting though? You know, tighten your social circle.
Yes, you can, and yes, you should. Research actually suggests that people have very high levels of job satisfaction in organizations where they have found best friends. Right. So it's not about, you know, how well job work is going, because again, demand, control and support. So if I have a lot of support, then the demands are not a big problem. But what we have found is that in this pandemic, there could be people who have just joined the organization as newcomers. There could be people who have moved different positions. And in one particular organization that we work with, majority of them had no idea who they were anyway, because it's a predominantly remote, offline kind of working company.
Right,
and so
right.
This is really like, hey guys, pick up the phone. That is a very old historic thing that has helped our forefathers when they didn't have Google and they could transcend countries as boundaries and, have very flourishing business. I would just say definitely, please stop texting, right? Please stop using the chat function of Microsoft Teams. Please unmute. Please call. Please talk like the old days, because that actually really creates a happy hormone called oxytocin. And if you don't have these happy hormones from other people or these love hormones, you cannot have your adrenaline hormones or cortisol hormones, which is all the difficult, stressful hormones. You cannot have that balanced up. So this is not a small thing. This is actually a huge thing. Please pick up the phone, have lovely conversations with people and do nice things for each other as well.
Okay. Now, I want to talk about the buzzwords that we've heard this year, languishing and flourishing. I know you have some data to share on that, right?
Yeah. So, what is really, really interesting over here is that these buzzwords have come out obviously like big time, right? Our scores show that majority of the folks that we have assessed are on the flourishing or the moderate part of the well-being score, which is fantastic news.
Yes, it is. That's great news.
Really, really good news. And this is basically, we are measuring how healthy people are. We're not talking about whether they're ill or not. We're talking about how healthy people are. And majority, this is as close to 80%, I think 80 to 90% are in the flourishing, if not moderate, part of this entire continuum called flourishing to languishing. This is great news. However, in a piece of research that I read, 55% of moderately healthy adults actually experienced a severe limitation in their life. And so that research actually suggested that having moderate amounts of health, though it is better than languishing, does actually lead to problems that you would face. So it's important to constantly try to stay in a healthy state mentally. So a lot of people ask me like, hey, Tol, okay, how do I stay, in a good, happy, healthy mental state? It will come back to emotional well-being, social well-being, and psychological well-being. And they're like, okay, how many times a day should I focus on this, hey, Tol? Like, how often should I focus on this? So my answer often to that is that if you brush your teeth every day, right, you should do that every day. So they're like, what about can we just do it like maybe at the end of the week or, once a week or once a month? So I would, get everybody to be reminded, we don't poop at the end of the week. We don't poop at the end of the month, right? We don't eat. We don't kind of pile up our non-eatingness for the week and then say, okay, I'll catch up on eating at the end of the week. But we do that for things like sleep. We do that for things like daily mental well-being. I think just as you brush your teeth, right, just take that moment while you're brushing your teeth to just activate maybe three things in your mind. Like number one, how do I look at myself better or be kinder to myself? How do I feel, make a really fun feeling in me right now? And the third thing could be, how do I create a positive feeling in somebody else? Maybe while you're brushing your teeth, just incorporate these three things for your mind, for your heart, and for somebody else. And just use that 1 minute, maybe, if that's the best that you can do.
All right. So what else do you have for us, Hetal?
Okay, so the last piece of data, which was, last two, one of it in terms of resilience, right? So the idea that people have very high levels of stress, but then they are still coping well or well-ish enough could be because of something that we have found in our resilience data, which is, across all companies, the highest cause or the highest resilience buffer that everybody unconsciously is using is something called spiritual influences. So
what does that mean?
So people are generally very, very spiritual in Malaysia, and spirituality or the belief in spiritual forces as a way to lead life has actually been found to be the core of wellness in one of the pieces of research called the Wheel of Wellness. So what I really mean by that is that it is great news that in Malaysia, close to 87% of people in our data utilize spiritual influences or consciously or unconsciously as a way to stay resilient. And this really means that, you know, I believe in something greater than myself. I believe that, there is this concept called fate and destiny. And I believe that things that are out of my control are looked after, you know, by some
higher
spiritual
being.
Forces.
Yeah.
And this has nothing to do with religiousness. But it's really I think something even more superior than that, which is really what it means to you. So this is a really, really good thing that that has come up not only in this data, but recurred in the past 5 years that we have collected data, that Malaysians generally have very high level of spirituality. That's a great buffer. In a separate piece of research that we did, humor was another thing that came up very high as well. Malaysians have really, really good sense of humor, and that really, really helps them. And humor is a huge stress buffer as well. So these are two great things. However, the last part that came up as the weakest link is control. So,
right.
Audrey, you
were back at
right.
control. Yeah.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The lowest in our resilience score was control. So it kind of boils down back to, yes, we may believe in higher spiritual forces. Yes, we may, have lots of hope and belief. However, we can also do much better in this space called control, which is our lowest score across all companies. Yeah, all companies' lowest score is in control of thoughts and emotions. And so we don't seem to have a high level of discipline in that space. And there's a huge potential to be able to be more mentally and emotionally trained to have a lot more control. We have 60,000 thoughts in our head per day. And if we let them wild, or rather if the environment triggers wildness in it, you're going to see huge uproar. And although in Malaysia we tend to be as polite as we can be, social media is that pathway of where we can release all our invisible thoughts and emotions for the whole world to see.
Right.
And so I think that tells us what's really going on inside. And so in essence, I would definitely say a lot of emotional and mental training can be extremely valuable in the workplace going forward.
All right. So, Hetal, you know, based on the data that you've just shared with us, what should an employer's main takeaway be? What would you like the general workforce to take away from all the data that you've shared with us today? You have any advice?
I think what has been most valuable, rather than an advice, I think what has been most valuable for our clients is that having data really helps, because they can understand what exactly is going on. They can see greatness in it. It's not all just bad. They can see greatness in it, and they can use it as levers to pull the organization up. So awareness is one thing. Through data, that is one thing. The second thing would be stop being scared of having conversations. As structures collapse, right? As structures in an organization collapse, as many, many things around us collapse, the one thing that holds us always together are really good, healthy conversations. So I think, you know, stay strong, maybe upskill yourself, be brave to have conversations, but be upskilled to be able to handle these conversations. And thirdly, put these as your personal KPIs, whether you're a business leader or an individual contributor, you know, make your life your KPI. In saying that, if it is your KPI, I want to be well, I want to be healthy, I want to be resilient and well at the same time, rather than resilient and unwell, then upskill yourself so that you're able to do it via primary interventions rather than secondary interventions, meaning take it on head on rather than trying to say, okay, maybe I'll eat an apple or maybe I'll attend a 1 hour well-being workshop. You know, if it is high workload, be able to say, how do I have conversations about it and address that per se, as a way of primary intervention. So in summary, data is very valuable. Use conversations to get to some root causes. And thirdly, like really have KPIs to say that, yes, this is important. I want to address it. And primary interventions to really address it head on as well.
All right. Thank you so much, Hetal, for all your insights on the show today. And I guess that is a wrap for this episode of Psychology at Work. Now, if you missed out on any part of this conversation, or if you'd like to catch up on our previous sessions where Hetal and I discussed how to make work suck less, the imposter syndrome, that was one of my favorites, and also our last episode on a better approach to layoffs, go look for the podcast on our website. That's bfm.my. You can also find all our podcasts on the BFM app. That's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. I've been speaking with Hetal Doshi, organizational psychologist and CEO of OPsych. My name is Audrey Raj, and this has been Psychology at Work on Resource Center BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.